This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. Baby, you dropped the bomb on me. But you turned me up. You dropped the bomb on me. Baby, you dropped the bomb on me. Just like Adam and Eve said you set me free. Hollywood Casino is our title sponsor. Spent some time there on Sunday afternoon. What a great place. Went up and looked at some of those newly refurbished rooms. The rates are outstanding. The people watching is great. And I'm telling you, that Final Cut Steakhouse is one of the best steakhouses in St. Louis. If you get a chance, go visit Hollywood Casino. You will absolutely love it. We appreciate them being one of our title sponsors. Man, do they do a great job. Another man who does a great job, he's my favorite baseball writer, maybe of all time. He used to spend a lot of time here in St. Louis when the Cardinals were in the postseason, but it's been a while, three straight years without a postseason appearance. He's the one and only Jason Stark from The Athletic. Jason, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
Hey, Frank. I'm doing great. How are you, sir?
Yes, sir. I got you now. How are you,
okay,
sir?
I'm doing great. How are you, my friend?
Very good. Well, I tell you, St. Louis, very interested in your in your column last week about Jordan Hicks having the greatest fastball ever. Elaborate, please.
Okay, I can do that. You know, look, I knew what I was going to hear back when I wrote that. I knew people were going to tell me about Nolan Ryan and Randy Johnson and every closer ever lived or Aroldis Chapman. I knew that was coming. But, you know, I got thinking about it after talking to Mike Maddux, who told me it's the best fastball he has ever seen. And he played with Randy Johnson. He played with Nolan Ryan. He's coached Max Scherzer, right? He's coached C.C. Sabathia and Cliff Lee and Steven Strasburg. He has seen a few fastballs, man. And so when I went to look, I'm not sure that there has been a combination of that kind of velocity, that kind of movement, and all that goes with it. Like, I know we're going to have arguments, but this is the kind of stuff we love to do in baseball and sports, right?
Absolutely. Why hasn't it translated, at least in that first year, to a higher strikeout rate, do you believe?
Well, I think it's about a couple things. First is that, think of everything that went into him making the team last year. He'd never been in Double-A. He'd never been in Triple-A. He'd never pitched out of the bullpen. He made the big league team without really even being in big league camp. You know, he didn't pitch in a big league spring training game until the last week of camp. And so he had a lot to adjust to. There was definitely that. The other part is there was virtually no secondary stuff until halfway through the year when he really began to find his slider. And that was a devastating pitch. I guess the third part is, there just was not enough strike throwing and not enough reason for hitters to swing at the balls that weren't strikes. You know, this guy gave up three barreled balls the entire season. Three? Never seen that. And so, as Andrew Miller said to me, if you're standing at home plate, why would you swing?
I used to talk about this with Trevor Rosenthal in the early stages of his career, and it was kind of a similar beginning. It was just breathtaking. And Trevor always said, even though he was out of central casting to be a closer in the big leagues, that he's a starter and he wants to be a starter. And he wants to be a starter because a guy like Mike Leake gets an $80 million contract and closers don't get that. And I know, like with Hicks, it seems like he's the prototype closer. But if I'm Hicks, I want starter money. Do you think the Cardinals would ever consider this, or do you think, you know what, you're a closer, and that's the way it's going to be?
Well, I mean, their clear feeling here is this is a back-of-the-bullpen guy, and that's what he's going to be. He's working on a changeup. He hadn't unfurled it in a game yet when I saw him. He's messing with his four-seamer to throw more strikes. But this is not a starting pitcher's repertoire. Everybody wants starting pitcher money, but if you look around the game right now, there's a lot of income in being a bullpen guy, a back-of-the-bullpen guy. I don't even think you have to be a quote-unquote closer anymore because it doesn't seem like the Cardinals are even going to have one of those. Andrew Miller has gotten paid quote unquote closer money without ever being a pure closer. You've seen some starting pitchers, the Dallas Keuchels of the world, have trouble even finding work. Relief pitchers are employable. They're employable deep into their 20s and 30s and even late 30s. So I really do think that that part of the equation is changing. I also asked Jordan about this, and he said, I am fine with whatever they want me to be.
You know, the combination of, knockout closers or relief pitchers, like in baseball history, Rivera setting up Wetland that one year was unbelievable. Sparky Lyle set up Gossage, I remember, in New York. Do you think this leak Andrew Miller thing, Hicks Andrew Miller thing has a chance to really be special?
It does if Andrew Miller's back and, you know, so far so good. Shoulder way more healthy, knee much healthier, and you know, I don't know how much wear and tear you can put on Andrew Miller. That would be my biggest concern. This guy has been used a lot. I mean, the volume on him compared to the average reliever over the last 3 or 4 years has been off the charts. So I think you have to be careful. But Andrew Miller is such a weapon, and Jordan Hicks is such a weapon, and the collection of arms around them are so dazzling. Really love this pen. Love this team, to be honest with you.
The Cubs probably aren't as bad as some people are portraying them. The Brewers did not address the pitching situation. Do you think the Cardinals are the team to beat in the Central, Jason?
I do. I had a scout tell me 2 weeks ago that the Cardinals are going to win the NL Central, and I haven't seen anything that would change my mind on that. I love the team on the field. Paul Goldschmidt is a franchise changer. And, I followed them around for a couple of days last week. And to hear the teams that the opposing hitters, to hear opposing coaching staffs, to hear opposing front offices, to hear opposing scouts talk about that collection of arms that they rolled out there has been eye-opening. You know, just that game against the Phillies, I mean, Flaherty came out and punched out 7 in a row. Every out was a strikeout or a ground ball back to the pitcher. That was a Cy Young-type performance. Right then, Miller and Hicks came after him. They were great. And then Alex Reyes, who I know is just feeling his way back into it, but that's a big arm. And just the collection of big arms combined with that lineup, I don't think there's the upside anywhere else that I saw in that team, especially in that staff. The Cubs are going to be better if Chris Bryant's healthier. They are, but there's a lot more uncertainty about their staff and the Cardinals staff for me.
Knowing Paul Goldschmidt and factoring in the uncertainty of free agency, look into your crystal ball and tell us what you think will unfold with the Goldschmidt situation.
You know, I hear so many people say that the surest bet of the year is that Paul Goldschmidt eventually signs a big extension with the Cardinals. I am not as convinced of that as most. I think he is determined to get market value, which means he's less interested in giving those kinds of hometown discounts that so many players in his situation have given the Cardinals. This could very easily be a Jason Hayward-type situation where he's just passing through. Is he going to love it? I'm sure he's going to love it. But, at his age, with what he's looking for, knowing the way the Cardinals think, I'm not so positive that they're going to pay him the kinds of years and dollars he thinks he deserves.
Why do you think – give us a little insight. Why do you think that he's really interested in just maximizing and get the most – dollars, as opposed to like if in midseason the Cardinals are playing well, he's hitting well, and they say, here's 5 years and $140 million.
Look, anything is possible. And, you know, if I were a free agent looking at trying to cash out a bunch of years in my 30s, I'd be terrified of becoming a free agent. But I just know from talking to the Diamondbacks people what they thought, what they saw. They felt like he signed a really team-friendly deal very early on, and recognized as he went along that, you know, he put up these big MVP type years and didn't get paid for them. And so I know we don't live in an age where players get paid for what they once did. They get paid for what they're about to do, what they're projected to do. That's going to be a problem for him at this stage of his career. But I do think that's in his head, that he undersold himself in those great prime years.
Do you think 5 and 150 would be the number, or is that a little too high?
You know, that's a really good question, Frank. I'm really bad at handicapping this stuff, but I do think that he has seen what Nolan Arenado got. He's seen what Manny Machado got. He saw what Bryce Harper got in total dollars. And it's impossible at his age for him to approach $250, $270, $300 million, $330 million. That's not going to happen. But the AAV is going to be really important with as many years as possible.
Since you,
so how is this not going to be a $30 million a year deal times however many years?
Since you did spend some time with the Cardinals, I don't know how you feel about this, but every time when I was in Jupiter and I asked anybody in the organization about Mike Schilt, I felt in the answer that there was a subtle dig at Mike Matheny, that they were praising Mike Schilt, but there was just a little bit of a shot at Mike Matheny. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's hard not to compare the current guy with the previous guy in a situation like this. There's a reason that Mike Matheny got let go, and it's easy to see and feel the difference in the vibe of the whole group. There's no doubt that there's a more positive environment, that things are way more relaxed and cool and confident. And I like Mike a lot. I mean, really smart, interesting, thoughtful guy. But there's no doubt as the time went along, people got uptight around him. And Mike Schilt, he just doesn't have any of that air about him. He's just so relaxed, so positive every day, so easy to talk to, just so enthused about every day in that uniform doing this job. I do think that the demeanor of the manager often rubs off on the group. That's happening. And, you know, you can attach whatever verb or adjective you want to describe the Mike Matheny tenure. He had a lot of success, but it was not wearing well. And this guy's been a breath of fresh air.
With that said, any doubt in your mind Matheny is the next manager of the Kansas City Royals?
That's a great question. There are a lot of people who think that. There's no doubt. I'm not sure how long Ned Yost wants to do it. He'd be a lot different than Ned. I'm not sure what they're looking for. So I think there's some doubt. He's been around their camp. They're getting familiar with him, and he's getting familiar with them. But I don't know how well they know each other, or whether they, you know, usually when one manager leaves, you want the opposite in the next guy. I don't know if that's true in this case, considering what the Royals are going to be here for a couple of years. This is not a team ready to win for some time.
Is there anything more mysterious in baseball than the offensive output of Jason Hayward, who is 6'5", 240, chiseled, always in great shape, and yet he hits 8 home runs a year?
Yeah, it's not a pretty swing. You saw it close up. There's just too much going on in that swing. And he's just, because of that, he just can't utilize his physical gifts. Guy with a really good feel for the strike zone, and as you said, a big, strong man. Matt Carpenter hit more home runs in one series at Wrigley Field last year than Jason Hayward hit there all year. That kind of tells you all you need to know.
That's why you are Jason Stark with a number like that. That is spectacular. Hey, I want to ask you, too, about a guy who you used to cover as we go back a little bit in time, and then you saw him in St. Louis, is Scott Rolen. And he doesn't fare well in this Hall of Fame voting. I think it was Mike Schmidt who called him the greatest defensive third baseman he's ever seen, coming from Mike
right.
Schmidt. And then
yep.
He also has this number 70, wins above replacement. What do you think? Is it just his career came to a crashing halt like Dale Murphy, and that's why he won't get in?
Well, it's not. I don't know if it's that exactly. It's you know, there definitely have been questions in people's mind about how injury prone he was and whether he got on the field enough. And I think actually, if you really look closely, I don't have my Hall of Fame notes in front of me, but his injury issues came late in his career. He wasn't as injury prone prior to that as people think. His shoulder took a big toll on him on both sides of the ball late in his career. But I think if the ballot is beginning to clear, you know, we're not going to have years coming up of 3-4 players getting elected to the Hall of Fame. Like all these automatic 90% Hall of Famers, that era is almost over once we get past Derek Jeter. And so I think that is going to help players like Scott Rolen. I look at my own ballot, Frank. You know, I can only vote for 10. And, you know, as I rank the group the last 2 years, I've had Scott Rolen number 11. So I think he's a Hall of Famer. I just haven't been able to vote for him because of the rule of 10. I won't have that problem now going forward. And I look forward to voting for him. I think Scott Rolen was a Hall of Fame player, and the people who don't believe that are not looking closely enough at how great he was.
And do you think Ted Simmons will go in via that special committee this year? And should he?
Well, I have to be careful about this because I was on that Modern Era committee that looked at him 2 years ago. And as you know, he got so much more support in that room than he had ever gotten in a baseball writer's election. I don't know what the makeup of the group will be, but it was a fascinating conversation because, you know, look, people like me were in the room, but there were also a lot of players from his generation. And, you know, I would say, like, this is why many of the baseball writers did not vote for Ted Simmons. What did you guys see? And the players in the room had great stuff to say about him. I don't know if it'll be the same players in the room. In these small committees, so much depends on the makeup of the group, but they'll be aware of how close he came the last time this came up, and that tends to really help players like him.
So the bottom line is, it's who's in that committee? Do they have a connection to Ted? It's kind of weird that that's what it's come down
to.
It's not
always that. Like my group, the former players, I don't know that there was anyone outside of maybe Don Sutton who had played with him, but Robin Yount, of course, did. But George Brett, Robin Yount, Dennis Eckersley, players like that, you know, they were really thoughtful and really incisive in the way they analyzed them, I thought. And it just, you know, it's 16 people in the room. You need 12 votes. And so it can really be skewed just by the makeup of even the ex-players in the room. If they didn't see as much of them, if they didn't like them for some reason, it takes 5 votes to knock you out, and that's not a lot.
Final thought, you must have a reflection about Tom Seaver and this terrible news with dementia. You've probably known about it, but what a sad thing for baseball.
Well, it really is painful to think that Tom Seaver is never going to be, you know, waving to the crowd at Cooperstown again, that we're never going to hear his super intelligent, thoughtful take on just about everything, as, you know, we got to do for so long after he retired. He was a really good broadcaster and just a really thoughtful man. It goes without saying, he's one of the great pitchers of all time. You know, and the Hall of Fame voting percentage reflects that. But just, you know, I think of Tom Seaver, and I think of Tom Seaver, the man, and what he represented just far beyond 60 feet 6 inches. And to think that we're never going to have a glimpse of that again, we're never going to get to hear from him again, I know a lot of people in the sport are just devastated by that.
Great stuff. Honored to have you on the program, sir. We're glad to hear your writing, and it's the best. There's nobody better. We really appreciate your time.
Frank, always a pleasure. So great to be with you. Thanks.
All righty. Jason Stark joining us. He's with The Athletic, and he's the reason you should get the subscription. because his baseball stuff is just off the charts.
And what he said about Goldschmidt is what I'm trying to say about Goldschmidt is he won't take a discount. He's ready to make money.
Yep. All right, we're going to switch topics. We're going to go baseball right to hockey. Chris Kerber joins us from the rink. Chris, great to be with you. How are you?
Frank, I'm awesome. How are you today?
Very good. So the decision to start Jordan Binnington tonight, your gut feel?
Yeah, not at all a surprise. You've got a busy week of four games. You know, you're going to head, and the next three are on the road. So Jake, having gone home off of a very good couple of games on the last road trip, spell him, put Jordan back in there, and go to work. I wouldn't make anything other. I wouldn't read too much into it. I think you've got two goaltenders going well, so play them.
The decision to move Robert Thomas to the first line, your gut feel there?
Well, you know, initially, Craig Berube thought about doing it last game when Tarasenko was out of the lineup, Frank. But he really thought that the speed of Thomas complemented that second line, you know, with Bozak and, of course, having Maroon on it. So, but now with, you know, some of the other differences that they looked and the speed that you're playing with the Arizona Coyotes tonight, he felt it's a chance to give Thomas an opportunity out there. And, you know, right now, and you still look down on it, they got some different contraptions out on the ice, and Robert Thomas is just sitting there passing the puck through him, you know, O'Reilly-style drills. I'll tell you something, Frank. I have all the years that we've been doing this, I don't know that I've ever seen a team after practices, even on a morning skate like this, do as much skill-type practices and work that they're doing this season. And I'm going to say that I'll give that the old O'Reilly effect on that. But I'm telling you, I haven't seen as much of this in the past as I've seen this year. It's pretty impressive.
How is Pat Maroon moving around?
Looked good. He actually just did the line rushes. So he looks like he's going to be in there. And it looks like he'll be slotted on that line with Tyler Bozak again. So Pat Maroon looks good.
And Maroon had a big moment on Saturday. And as you've been telling us for the last 3 weeks, boy, do they need another line to step up.
Yeah, you know, you needed a goal, and it was a great. It came off the boards, and he one-timed it in. And look, Craig Berube is real direct and really blunt, you know, with these players. And I talked to Pat after the game, and he said, no, Berube said, look, I know you're working hard. No, you know, I can see that you're trying. I can see the work ethic, and all that's great. He goes, but it's about producing, and it's about production, and we need production. And I said, he told you that. And Pat goes, yep, directly just like that. And I go, he goes, and I love it too. You know, I mean, that's one of these things that this coach is doing, and these players seem to be responding to it. So they know the expectations, and he's living up to it right now.
Wow, that's a good story. That's good stuff. That's why we pay you so much money to be on this program, Chris.
Just trying to help.
All right, what about the Coyotes tonight, your scouting report?
Well, you know, this is an important game from a standing standpoint. The Coyotes being ninth, and so the Blues have a chance to go ahead and put a little more distance between them and the number nine spot. They're essentially coming in, Frank, right now looking at it with, to work it in magic numbers, the magic number of 10. Any combination of Blues wins or Coyotes losses totaling 10 or 20 points would be another way to look at it. So all of a sudden you can shave two of those games off with a win here head-to-head. So it's important from a standing standpoint for the St. Louis Blues. The Coyotes lost last night big time to Chicago. Darcy Kuemper got pulled. I don't know who's going to start for them in net tonight. He got pulled early, but they lost 7-1. And you know what happens there. Normally, you take a beating like that, you're going to come out with a little more focus. So the Blues should know exactly what kind of game is coming their way intensity-wise, knowing that the Coyotes got pasted last night.
Which two teams in the West would you not want to see if you're the Blues? Kind of a gut feel on that now.
In the first round?
Yeah.
Which two teams? Oh, I'd say in the first round of the playoffs, I would say Nashville and Winnipeg.
Even though they've had success against Nashville, but they didn't see Pekka Rinne in some of those victories, correct?
Correct. Yeah, a couple of them, they had UC Saros. I think the Blues have always seen the matchup pretty well. I know a few years ago, San Jose really had their number, and that's what prevented the Blues from getting to the finals. But I like the matchup against San Jose right now. You know, but if you gave me a third team, I would throw San Jose in there as a team you would like to try to avoid. You know, an interesting one would be the Dallas Stars. The Blues haven't played well against the Dallas Stars, and you know, there's a legitimate chance that could still be a matchup that happens. So sometimes, Frank, the way I look at it, though, is when somebody says pick your poison, you're still picking a poison, which means you got to deal with it.
So that first line, when they've been intact, they had that glitzy stat of being 13-0 and having 56 points. And the Blues are 27-10-3 in games in which Tarasenko records a point. So how devastating is this loss for four games?
I think it's a big loss, especially with the way he had been playing. Since the turn of the year, he had really increased his effort level, his commitment on both sides of the puck. You could see him leading by example on the ice. So I think it's a huge loss. It's a top, you know, it's a top two forward loss, you know, the way I look at it. So, you know, it's huge. So big opportunity now for Robert Thomas to join that top line. They're going to need some other guys to step up. David Perron still not ready to go. Robbie Fabry will still be a healthy scratch, you know. So at some point in time, it's going to come down to more points for Bozak. Steen's going to need some points. You're going to need some production from that fourth line. Barbashev's got 19 points. You know, these guys have got to continue to chip in to balance some scoring out, because when a guy like Tarasenko's not on the ice, it gives the other team a chance to really key in on some things. And then lastly, I also think that that means that the special teams are going to be key. You can take a lot of pressure off your 5-on-5 play if you can get a power play goal or two, as the Blues have shown on that last road trip.
So a couple of weeks ago, we had a goalie situation where we clearly had a number one in Binnington and a two in Jake Allen. Then it's become a bit of a one and 1A. Now do you think it's like dead even, or how do you assess it?
No, I still think it's the 1-1A the way I would look at it. Now, look, Jake Allen's numbers in March over his career have been really phenomenal. I mean, I think he's only lost, six games in regulation in his career in the month of March. And so he's been really good. I think you could see some of the fatigue factor kick in on Jordan Binnington. He was a little lackadaisical on playing some pucks, you know, maybe in those last couple of games he's gone in. So I think this is a big response one for him, but I still think you've got to kind of run with things the way you're running, and the way you're going to do this is the hot hand. You're going to play Binnington tonight, and then if he's depending on how good he is, maybe you go with him against Ottawa, and you set yourself up for a solid back-to-back with Pittsburgh, Buffalo, you know, coming up over the weekend. But you've just got to keep riding the guy that you think has just played the best previous game and manage fatigue until you get through this. This will be the final week for the team to really get done with that road swing, and next week they're finally home for consecutive home games for the first time since the middle of January. So a huge battle week for the Blues coming up mentally, I think.
Chris, great stuff as usual. We'll be listening tonight. Thank you, sir.
Okay, Frank, have a great day.
All right, Chris Kerber joining us. He's brought to us by Petromart. Petromart is locally owned and operated. It's a family business that's been serving St. Louis for over 30 years. Each location is just as clean, fast, and friendly as the next, with 50 locations to serve you. In a hurry, Petromart offers a wide selection of grab-and-go food items like hot-and-ready pizza, fresh fruit, and salads. Petromart has something for everybody, and it's always prepared fresh and available around the clock. Petromart, a proud sponsor of Phillips 66 Gasoline and a proud sponsor of the St. Louis Blues. A proud sponsor of the phone lines is Maryville University. Continuing to build a more diverse and inclusive campus is a core value of the institution and one of four pillars in Maryville's strategic plan. Go to maryville.edu for more information. And finally, a quick word about our favorite senior living residence. It is the Gatesworth, 170 in Del Mar, 1 McKnight Place. Stop by and visit. It's a cruise ship that doesn't float. Movies, activities, great food, just a gorgeous place to live. It's the finest in senior living, the Gatesworth. We'll be right back with Martin Kilcorn.